Hello and welcome to the RCGP podcast on peanut allergy. Today I'll be talking to Dr. Helen Brough, consultant in paediatric allergy and head of the service for children's allergy at the Evelina Hospital, about the diagnosis of management of peanut allergy. Helen, could we start with a bit of background information about peanut allergy?
Yes, thanks, Tony. And I'm really delighted to be having a chat with you today about this. So with regards to peanut allergies, it's the most common nut allergy, particularly in the UK. In other parts of Europe, other nuts such as cashew or walnut are more common. And interestingly, although we call peanut a nut, it is formally actually a legume, but it is much more associated with tree nut allergy than it is with legume allergy. So peanut allergy is in approximately 2 to 3% of children now. So that's actually a big increase from what it was about 20 years ago. And it is something that has been shown to increase in the last few decades, but now seems to be stabilizing. When you compare this to other food allergies, for example, egg allergy is more common than peanut allergy. Egg allergy can be around 5 to 6%, and milk allergy is around 2 to 3%. The important thing about peanut allergy, in contrast to egg and milk allergy, is that peanut allergy is not often outgrown. So only 20% of children outgrow their peanut allergy. And if they're going to outgrow their peanut allergy, they usually do this by the time they're 5 years of age, in contrast to milk and egg allergy, where most children outgrow these allergies.
Thank you very much. That's really useful to know that bit of background. So let's go on to a case. And let's say I'm in my morning surgery. So I speak to the mother of a child on the phone, and she tells me that the child had some peanuts recently and their mouth swelled up and they went to hospital. And from the description, it sounds more like a kind of angioedema type reaction than full-blown anaphylaxis. And of course, I've got no letter or correspondence from the hospital yet, from the emergency department. How would I approach that consultation?
Thanks very much. And this is a really common occurrence, and it's really good to have some really useful guidance on this, which is the NICE guidance for the diagnosis of food allergy in primary care, which has been around for some time now. And in that guidance, they have an allergy-focused history, which is very important because it gives some very crucial pieces of information to decide whether this is actually peanut allergy or maybe this is a coincidence. I have had quite a few patients referred to me for urticaria that has lasted for several days, and the concern is that it is due to a food allergy, when actually the most common cause of urticaria in children is viral-induced urticaria. And classically, this goes on for several days and waxes and wanes as the child has the viral infection or post-viral sequelae. So in terms of peanut allergy or other food allergies, generally what happens is that the child eats the food and usually within half an hour starts to have classical symptoms of IgE-mediated allergy. So that means hives, angioedema, potentially some vomiting, runny nose, sneezing, and in the more severe cases, this can lead to more severe symptoms such as wheezing, coughing, persistent cough, lethargy or drowsiness, which are the features of anaphylaxis and need to be treated with adrenaline. So once the diagnosis has been looked into in terms of using an allergy-focused history, and there are many other parts to this, such as where it was consumed, how much was consumed, and whether it has been consumed before without any reactions or since. So it's very, very useful to go through that. Then the question is whether to refer to secondary care. And the NICE guidelines also give very good advice on this. So in terms of reaction and severity of reaction, obviously anaphylaxis should be referred to secondary care. And often when the parent thinks that the child has an allergy, the history is not consistent with that, it can be useful to refer to secondary care. In the delayed allergies, there are other features such as the child's not growing well. And if the child has food allergy and asthma as well, then it's a good practice to refer to secondary care. And if the child has multiple food allergies, then it's more difficult to manage in primary care and may also be helpful to refer to secondary care. In the case of this child, they did not seem like they had anaphylaxis. So it was a mouth swelling, and this happened very quickly after eating peanuts. I'm assuming that the mouth swelling went down quite quickly as well and did not recur the next day. And this would sound like a mild to moderate reaction that would generally always be managed with antihistamines. Again, it would be important to know if the tongue swelled up or if there was any sensation of throat closing because the mouth swelled up, and so that's near the upper airways. So in GP practice, I know that you can do IgE testing. So the diagnosis of peanut allergy could also be confirmed with a specific IgE to peanut. Some practices also have access to the main seed storage component to peanut, which is ArrH2, and that can be very helpful for confirming the diagnosis. You'll find that allergy doctors have different approaches to prescribing adrenaline auto-injectors. So there are useful guidance from the British Society of Allergy and Clinical Immunology and also the European Allergy Academy of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. But in general, there is consensus about the main indications for prescribing adrenaline. So if the child has had anaphylaxis to peanut, then it would be an indication, an absolute indication, to prescribe adrenaline auto-injectors, because the gold standard treatment for anaphylaxis is adrenaline, and the adrenaline auto-injectors are the preferred way to administer this in the community. Then there are other indications, such as, for example, if the child has food allergy and asthma. The reason for this is that children with asthma are unfortunately those that have more severe reactions to foods, particularly if their asthma is poorly controlled. And in most cases of fatalities from food allergy, the child has had asthma. Then there are other indications, such as living far away from medical care, and also if the child is a teenager, if the child reacted to a very, very small amount of the food. So these are all some of the things to consider when deciding whether to prescribe adrenaline, but also it's very important to take into consideration the feelings of the parent and the child, where the indication is not, it is a relative indication. And then again, there are different ways to approach whether to prescribe one or two adrenaline auto-injectors, but I won't go into that at the moment. In terms of the dietary avoidance, that's really important to go through. So the family need to be advised on how to read the ingredients labels. They need to be advised on how to manage the precautionary allergy labels, or those labels that say may contain. They need to be advised that, for example, these peanut can be hidden in certain foods, particularly our Chinese and Indian takeaways can have peanut in them. And I caution my families with this advice.
Thank you very much. That's a fantastic, useful lot of information to guide my sort of general approach to this patient. So moving on to another case, and it's similar. We talked about parents of children with eczema often wanting allergy testing. We've talked generally about parents wanting allergy testing, and this often happens with children with eczema. And I understand that this is particularly important for babies, very little ones, and when they have very severe eczema. Could you talk me through, firstly, how you would define severe eczema in primary care?
Yes. So the objective way that people generally look at severity of eczema is by using the SCORAD measure, which is what's done often in clinic. There's a scoring atopic dermatitis is what SCORAD stands for. And the parts of this are looking at how extensive the eczema is, so how much of the body is affected, looking at the intensity of the eczema, the redness, swelling, oozing, crusting, skin thickening, dryness, scratch marks or excoriations, and then also subjective symptoms such as how bad the itch is and how bad the sleepless nights are. And so all of these things go into SCORAD. But also from a practical point of view, children who have required topical steroids, particularly more than mild to moderate topical steroids, who are having regular flares, who are having regular, you know, infections of eczema as well. So all of these things can indicate that the child has severe eczema. What to do with children with severe eczema in primary care? So we know that children with severe eczema are more at risk of developing food allergy. For example, in the Health Nut study, they did a study where they showed that children, particularly those that had developed eczema from under 3 months of age and had required prescribed topical corticosteroids, that they had a 50% risk of having either peanut, egg, or sesame seed allergy at 1 year of age. And this was based on an actual food challenge, so the gold standard way of measuring food allergy. So children with severe eczema are at more risk of developing food allergy. And there has been a lot of research in the last 5 to 10 years looking at how this can be prevented. The two studies that I was involved in were the LEAP study, Learning Early About Peanut study, and the EAT study, which is inquiring about tolerance. And I'll focus on the LEAP study because that was particularly about peanut in children with severe eczema. And they took 640 children and they randomized them. They were between 4 months and 11 months of age. And they were either advised to introduce peanut into the diet in regular amounts with 3 teaspoons of peanut butter per week, or they were advised to avoid peanut. At the time when the study started in 2006, that was the Department of Health guidance for children with a family history of allergy. And these children were then followed up until they were 5 years of age and they underwent food challenges. And it was found that the children who had introduced peanut early in their diet in high doses, which is what I describe now, they had an 81% reduction in peanut allergy. And actually in the children that were able to introduce the peanut because they weren't already allergic, this actually came closer to 100%. So the guidance for preventing food allergy has come out since then, both in America, UK, Europe, Australia, all over the world, that actually introducing allergenic foods earlier into the diet is helpful for the prevention of food allergy, particularly for peanut and egg allergy. So in a child with severe eczema at 4 months of age, there are guidance from the British Society of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. And the recommendation is that if the child does have eczema or severe eczema, that where facilities are available for screening for peanut, then this is something that is a good idea. But where there are not available resources for a screening, then the guidance says not to avoid introduction beyond 12 months of age, because actually introducing allergenic foods after 12 months of age could increase the risk of food allergy.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much. So we should be presumably screening children with severe eczema for peanut allergy, and we can do this by a specific IgE in primary care. And then if that's negative, they don't need a referral necessarily onwards to an allergy specialist like yourself.
Yeah, so that is what the National Institutes for Health in the US, they recommend. So they recommend that children in this situation for screening have an IgE to peanut, and if it's less than 0.35, that the family can introduce this at home. But if it's above 0.35, then they recommend further assessment and skin prick testing.
That's great. That's definitely something that's going to change my practice dealing with these kids. And I think it's fantastic to know that from the LEAP study that a simple dietary change can save some children from all the stresses and strains that come with a peanut allergy and all the stresses for the family. Thank you very much. That's been a fascinating run through of peanut allergy with some of the issues that are being dealt with in secondary care, talking about some of the reasons why we might decide to refer or not to refer. Big thank you to Dr. Helen Brough, consultant in paediatric allergy at the Evelina Children's Hospital. And thank you very much for listening to this RCGP podcast.